just sit and write what you want to write. Don't pay attention to anything else until you reach the end.
Welcome to Angle on Writing, a podcast about writing, publishing, and book marketing. Welcome, writers. Today, I am with the author of the Southern California Mystery Series. Welcome, Lita Sedaris.
Thank you so much, Lisa, and thank you so much for inviting me to be here with you.
So you're an author, but you didn't start out as a writer, did you?
No, I'm a lawyer by career profession, but I always wanted to write. And that's what kind of motivated me to work in the entertainment industry. I figured I'd be around creatives, which was what I was hoping for.
So how did it happen? How did you finally go from law, which I'm sure helps with, the mystery genre, to actually writing and publishing?
Well, it took some time, maybe 20 years. It took a long time. And I wasn't sure ever if I could write. I liked the confidence. But there was a contest to enter a couple of chapters at the San Francisco Writers Conference. And I did. I submitted two chapters from a work of historical fiction in progress. And I won a scholarship to that conference. So that was a big surprise. I attended. And another big surprise was everyone who approached me thought I could actually write. I was the only one who didn't know I could do it. So that was, again, a big confidence booster. And when I came back, I decided I didn't want to write the historical fiction. It was kind of depressing. Instead, I decided to write kind of a, not exactly a cozy mystery, because they have an edge to them, my series, but a more lighthearted mystery, loosely based on my former life working as a movie studio attorney, except I had no homicides. But my book's homicides occur off the page. There's no violence on the page, except my heroine does do a little bit of beating up of criminals just to get it out of her system, all the anger she has against them. So that happens once in a while.
Well, that sounds really fun. So you're, there are so many little niche in the mystery genre that, so you're kind of like cozy, but with an edge.
Yes. I never considered writing cozies, and I don't recall reading cozies unless like Nancy Drew is called one. But I was surprised when I appeared on, I did book tours and things, and people always said, oh, you write cozy mysteries, or I loved your cozy mystery. I said, okay, I can do that if that's what they want. So yeah, it worked out very well.
Okay, so you figured out that you could write, and you actually got a manuscript together.
Yes.
And how did that find its way into the world?
Well, it took me about 2 years after the writers' conference, and I didn't know anything. I was so green that if I laid down in the grass, you wouldn't see me. So I sent it out initially before it was ready, and to agents, and I got rejected. And one of them even said, the only thing I liked about your book was the title. That was the title of my first book, Murder and Other Unnatural Disasters. Anyway, so I swore off writing forever, and that lasted about 2 weeks. And then I came back and I rewrote it and rewrote it and rewrote it. As you know, Lisa, that's the world of writing. And then I submitted it to another contest sponsored by the Mystery Writers of America. It was also for a scholarship award. It had a monetary award as well. And I won. Another huge surprise. So that helped when I sent it out. And then I went to another conference, Crime Bake in Massachusetts near Boston. And while I was at that conference, I met with three agents and they seemed interested. But when I came home, I received an offer from a small press, and I was beside myself with joy, so I accepted it right away. And that's how the first book was published.
It's a series. So did you continue with the same main character, or?
Yes, with the same characters, but with a different publisher. Because the publisher that I selected was mostly focused on romance novels. And so they attended all the romance conferences. And I was hoping to have a mystery publisher who I could meet at the mystery conferences. But everyone told me you can't change a series like that. Even some publishers told me. But again, pure luck. There was a new publisher coming out who had only done anthologies prior to that time. And I submitted a short story, my first mystery short story, and it was accepted to be in their anthology, Best New England Crime Stories. And I learned that just at that time, again, very fortuitous, they were starting a novel publishing arm. So I said, I have this book one, but I want to write a series. And she said, send me the second one. By then, I had the second one done, thankfully. You know, it's a miracle every time you get a book done 77,000 words later. It's not easy. In any case, they liked it, and I signed on with them, and they published my next two through six. And I'm currently working on book seven for them, which should be the last in the series.
Do you like doing a series using the same? So, with a series, it's the same main character, or are there other? I haven't interviewed a lot of people who've written that long of a series. Six books, that's pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you. I have the main character, and she has three sidekicks. Her sidekick kind of shifted after book three, I think it was, because she was getting a little too close to one of them. And I didn't really want to introduce a heavy-duty romance. I wanted it to be focused still on mysteries. But for the most part, the sidekicks are the same, but the other characters change. And for me, it works because it's a certain comfort level. Oh, I get to be with these same characters again. How fun. What am I going to have her do this time? You know, what scrapes are they going to get into? And, you know, the most trouble, who's going to get into the most trouble in this edition? And so that's fun for me, and I hope it's the same for my readers.
What's next? Are you going to start another series? Or I think you've dabbled into other, you've done some short stories, but you've also done some other type of books.
I have. I'm working on finishing number seven, as I mentioned, but I've also written a picture book. This picture book, it's for kids, The Cookie Eating Fire Dog. And that I wrote probably when my kids were little, maybe 25 years ago. And it happened because one of my sons had a Dalmatian that he loved, carried him everywhere with him. And one day he came to me and said, his Dalmatian's name was Dan. He said, Dan doesn't want to help the firefighters. I said, why not? He said, because all he wants to do is eat cookies. And so that was the seed for the story. And I wrote it way back then, but I couldn't really do too much with it. I sent it out, I think, to two publishers. Then fast forward, my first publisher opened up to picture books. She said, do any of you have any? And I happened to have this manuscript sitting in my drawer, sent it to them, and The Cookie Eating Fire Dog was born. That was in 2018.
So, are you going to write more of the picture books? Or are you going to, what's next? Where do you want to go from here?
That's a great question. If I could, if I had, you know, seven more arms, I would love to write more picture books. I'd love to write in other genres. But since I only have two arms, oh, excuse me, six arms. My math is terrible. I just demonstrated that. I'm not an octopus, is what I was trying to say. I'm going to finish my mystery, and then I have a book in another genre in progress. I want to try something different. And I do have a couple of children's books too in progress, among many other things. So I don't know. To answer to your question, I'm not sure which direction life will take me in.
Well, I know that next month you'll be doing at least one workshop at the Santa Barbara Writers Conference. How did you find that conference? You've gone to so many.
Yes, I actually volunteered there. I think it was 2007, to some around there. I volunteered at the conference, and I just love the conference director. I mean, Grace, I don't know, now she's the director. I don't know if she was a director back then, but she's just a marvelous human being, as you know. So, but right after that, I got a full-time job in Santa Barbara that took up all of my time. So I thought, oh, I'm never going to write a book now. But again, 2012, things changed for me and I started writing. Then I met along the way Melinda Palacio. I don't recall how we met, must have been at the conference. And then we had a few lunches and we got to talking. And then we thought about doing a workshop together. And that's really how it started.
And what is your workshop?
Well, our current one, which we did last time, last two times, I believe, as well, is how to be your own best publicist. And what'll be different about this year's workshop, I can't wait, is we'll be talking about AI. Well, that's all the rage, as you know. Substack, also all the rage that you know. And I asked Grace if anyone else at the conference is going to be talking about how to write back cover copy, because I really enjoy condensing my 77,000 words into 150 or so. You can imagine it's like trying to, find a needle in a haystack, but I'd like to go over that as well. And, other things, press releases, book signings, other creative ways to promote your books, promote our books. I mean, there's just so much. I think between the two of us, Melinda and I, we've done it all. I've been at wineries. Where else have I been? Oh, just so many different places. I know it's going to escape me. I think I just passed by one last week. We had a mini writers conference at this center for electricity up in San Luis Obispo. That was different. And it was very interesting. So anyway, I hope to impart to whoever attends our workshop all the wisdom we've gathered over the years.
Sounds like well, because in today's world, I mean, even if you have a traditional publisher, they're
Oh.
not going to whether because there's a lot of Simon and Schuster and Hachette. They do a lot of small authors, not these big Hollywood New York Times names, but so those people. They publish them, they do all the publishing, but the bulk of the publicity falls on the author.
Exactly.
So you either have to find other people to do it for you, or you have to do it yourself. And it sounds like you're have got some really good out of the box type of outside the box kind of ideas. So that's great.
That's a great way of putting it, Lisa. Yes, I hope they're out of the box ideas. What the publisher does is they do send it before it's released, the book, to big review outlets. And so that's a good thing that they do. They also will do NetGalley and Goodreads giveaways. Those are very helpful too, or they can be. Beyond that, I think it's basically on us, to do arrange our own blog tours, book tours in person. And anything else that might help promote. This past or 2 weeks ago, I appeared with a group of authors. Two of them were professional actors. We have professional actors too. We've done this at several bookstores. And what we do is not just readings of our books, we do dramatic readings. So we all turn into actors and act out the different parts. And it not only is it so much fun for us, but it seems to be very enjoyable for our audience as well. So that's definitely out of the box too.
Yeah, definitely. And that's helpful for people who might consider doing their own audiobook.
Yes, very much so. And I'm no actress, but somehow it seems to work because we know our books better than anyone else. So we know how they should sound, what the little nuances are that should be there.
Definitely. I think that I know Matt Palomary, he has said he does his own audio versions, and he says that he uses that as his final edit. As far as reading it and doing the narration, he'll find maybe some words or some phrasing that is easier, sounds more true to the story.
Very true. I was just talking about that with Mara Pearl, who was one of the authors with me, and we were saying how when we adapt our scenes for our dramatic readings, we notice that, this shouldn't have been there. We didn't need this. You can perpetually edit your books, as you know, because you always want to make it better. But when you say it out loud, it makes a big difference when you read it out loud.
Another thing I wanted to touch on what that you said that in your workshop that you're going to be talking about writing the back copy material or the description for the book page, and that is what I have found. I mean, I don't think AI works for writing anything as far as creatively, but when it comes to something like description copy, that is where I know when I wrote the description copy for my book, it was just it took so much time. I went through so many description pages and copying down keywords and phrases and stuff like that, and trying to figure out how to, because that's how people are finding things online, is through these trope words and those phrases that jump out at you to know what you're supposed to expect. And AI can do that just like boom. And so I think that that's one of the best uses for authors and an AI.
I have to agree with you. And I can give you an example. One of the authors that I do virtual tours with, another mystery author, we're all with the same, there are four of us, we're all with the same publisher. She needed back cover copy for her latest book. So she asked us if we would help her. I did it without AI, but one of my colleagues, another author, did it solely AI. And I was so impressed with what AI did with it. But the author who requested the help decided to, she didn't know what to do because she said they were both good. And we have clauses in our contracts that say we're not supposed to use AI. So, but they didn't, back cover copy wasn't mentioned. That's for the actual material, the text inside the book. I suggested that she combined them. And just let the publisher know that this is what I'm doing. This part's from AI, this part's not. That's what she ended up doing. But again, I was astonished at what AI did. But I liked mine too because I felt like you couldn't really feel the suspense or the edge of the seat drama went with AI. I couldn't quite get that. So next time for my next one, I have tried AI for some things. There, it's very good at least to get you started. And sometimes I will take a phrase, but beyond that, there's nothing like your own work. It comes from your heart.
Definitely. And that's where I've done this for clients too, where it's like their book's description is a little, just a little so I'll run it through AI, and then but then you always have to go through and use that as a jumping off place and go, okay, well yeah, they've got the right tone. They've really captured, they mean the AI really captured the essence and marketing of it, but then you have to go through and put in your own work. Yeah, so that
Exactly.
I think is going to be a great discussion.
Thank you. And also, AI responds differently to your prompts. So it's important to know the right words to use to ask them, to ask AI to create something for you, and then to fine-tune it as well. But you know what I discovered, Lisa, thanks to my sister, who's a ardent AI user, she creates photographs of me, all AI generated, that are interesting. I'll say it's me in not real life situations, but like dressed like a detective. And I thought that was fun. And who knows, I might use it in the future for a promotion somehow.
Yes, that sounds like a great way of using it to do maybe not for a book cover, but for social media posts and stuff, or for blog posts. Yeah, to get that, because you need that visual to capture people's attention. Yeah.
And it's a fun visual that you can't necessarily do on in real life, but AI's sitting there waiting to do it for you, so it worked well.
Yeah. Well, what would you have to say to people who are just now starting out and, wanting to improve their writing, or, what would you tell your younger self?
Well, I was going to say that I worked in my day job with attorneys, a lot of them, and I can't tell you how many times they approach me and say, "You're doing what we'd love to do. Oh, I want to write. I want to know how do I do this." So many, but really the key is just to write it from beginning to end because it's hard to reach the end. I mean, you know, Lisa, it takes a lot of effort. And along the way, sometimes you have this voice sitting on your shoulder that says, "You can't do this. No one's going to read this." I couldn't believe I still hear that little voice, even when I'm on my number six book. It's still sitting there, but I keep reminding myself, you can do this. So really just sit and write what you want to write. Don't pay attention to anything else until you reach the end. And the end may take, like Robert Louis Stevenson wrote, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and I think like 2 months, even while he was delirious with fever. But it won't, I don't know if we can do that. I know I can't. It took me again 2 years for my first book, and that's fine. It's taken other people much longer or shorter. Just do it, really. I don't know why I waited so long. Why didn't I start sooner? So just do it.
Yeah, that's great advice. Yes. But what about on the, since you're going to be teaching about PR, what about on the PR side? What kind of advice would you give to somebody who's just starting out and they're getting ready to publish their book?
I get asked that often because they all say, I'm an introvert. I'm terrified. I'm an introvert. I was terrified. But, just being able to write the book and feeling the book in your hands, having it here, looking at it and saying, wow, I wrote this and I'm so excited about it. I can't wait to tell people. I would start small. I would start with just a book signing, nothing else, no talking. Just go and sit there and show that you're just loving what you do. You're having a great time. Reach out to people who just pass by just to chat. Hand out your book marks, and then gradually work your way to maybe attending conferences and actually being a panelist on a conference and doing whatever you can. I was just shocked at how easy it came to me. Again, because we're following our passion. We're doing what we love. When you do that, you can't help but come out of your shell and want to talk to other writers and readers, my favorite people to be around. So, and I'm again, I'm going to borrow from Nike, I think their slogan, just do it and don't worry, your terrified feeling will disappear once you start.
That's true because I mean there's big, going speaking at a book signing or even going to a book like the LA Times Festival of Books and some of that stuff might be intimidating, whereas local libraries like the Santa Barbara Library has their little Day, author day, or the Carpinteria has a an art center with a day for authors, and those are great. You sit at a table and people just wander by and you talk to them or you don't.
Yes, and the LA Times Book Festival is really, really good. If you can join an organization that gets a booth, because the booths are expensive, like if
Yes.
you're a mystery writer, there's Sisters in Crime, there's Mystery Writers of America, and I always went or go to booths with them because all I have to do is stay there, sit there. I usually stand up when people come around. And sometimes you sit with huge authors. Unfortunately, I can't remember the huge authors that I sat with, but I did. It was wonderful because they come from for them, and then they find everyone else as well. So it's a marvelous experience, and people want to, they're there for books. So what better place to be than among people who are looking for books?
Exactly. Yes.
Same with libraries, same with any kind of book festival.
Well, thank you so much. This has been, a lot of fun and a lot of great information.
Thank you very much, Lisa, again, for including me in this wonderful series.